Hello and welcome to another episode of On My Last Eggs.
It's getting easier, but yeah, at 39 and having two small young children and can't work out why I'm forgetting things all the time. Why do I feel this crushing anxiety sometimes? This is the point my career is meant to be taking off, and this is the point I'm getting kids into primary school. It is really strange.
I'm Rachel, and like millions of other women worldwide, I'm navigating the wild throes of perimenopause. And I'm lifting the lid on what that whole messy, confusing journey entails, with plenty of lols and WTFs along the way.
And that's been like almost 2 years until yesterday when I got my first prescription for HRT.
Very pleased to welcome to On My Last Eggs, Erin McTague, who is the co-chair of Women at the BBC North, and also has started a BBC-specific menopause cafe. Hi, Erin. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks, Rachel.
I love to start with people's menopause journey. It feels a bit like, you know, when someone's had a baby and you say, oh, tell me about the birth.
Yeah.
it feels like that with menopause. You want to sort of see what similarities you've got. I think it's probably fair to say that your perimenopause started quite early, didn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's like you're saying, is that like, you know, sharing journeys. When I talk to people, there's not many people who can say, oh yeah, I share that same journey in terms of age, it feels like. So for me, I was looking back for actually the NHS app going, oh, when was that prescription for that weird thing that I had? And 2017, where I started having UTIs and pelvic pain and, you know, the hip pain. Then I started having migraines for some reason. And it's just like over the past couple of years, along with irregular periods that I was putting down to other things, started to have, you know, perimenopausal symptoms, I suppose. And looking back in hindsight, you know, I can say that, you know, that's what they were. But going to GPs and going to doctors, and, you know, that's the last thing on their mind, it's the last thing on my mind. But so, you know, you're getting tested for thyroid, you're getting tested for cancer, you're getting tested for dementia and heart, you know, going through like echograms and things like that for my heart. And then eventually getting to that point where I was like, I think this is what it is, because one of my staff who worked with was coming to me and saying, oh, I'm menopausal, I'm going through these symptoms, I really want your support, there's this thing going on in Scotland, shall we go to it? And it was the Business in the Community Day, which was all about menopause awareness for managers. And I went along listening to these stories of women going, hang on a minute, that's me, and that's me, and, you know, but I can't be because I'm too young, I'm not 51, I'm not anywhere near that at the moment. And it just feeling a bit sort of strange to think, oh, those symptoms, you know, correlate with this. So it was only at that point that I went back to my GP and started having those conversations. And even they were about like, well, you're far too young. It can't possibly be this. And that's been like almost 2 years until yesterday when I got my prescription, first prescription for HRT. There was the conversation with, you know, one of the many GPs that you get these days. And she was saying to me, you know, what we need to do is we need to send you for another round of blood tests. And I was like, no. I think you've had enough blood. I think we've had enough tests. I think I've had enough of everything. This is what I think this is. And this is what, you know, we've discussed. And so, yeah, so finally got there, I think, hopefully.
Congratulations on the HRT. It's such a minefield, isn't it? Because, you know, HRT isn't always the answer for everybody, and not everybody needs or wants HRT.
Yeah.
But it can be a battle if you feel that's the thing for you, if you're really feeling that all those symptoms together and they're really impacting on your life. And I think, like you said, if those symptoms start at 39, nobody is going to take you seriously. However, I was in a very similar situation. It's interesting hearing you. I went for heart monitoring, the endless UTIs. I was tested for thyroid, and I was 51. So much harder situation for a younger woman, you know, to sort of convince anyone to take them seriously. But the irony of it is that even when you are slap bang the age the menopause is supposed to happen, because I was still having periods. My GP kept saying, but you're still having periods.
That's the thing, is that even though they are regular, or you've not had one in 9 months and all this sort of thing, you definitely can't, it can't be this for you. And, you know, you are outside of that. And saying, well, some women do. I've been reading about this early menopause, and some women do go through it earlier than others. And me and my sisters, we talk about fertility. We've all got issues. And, you know, I think it's one of those three M's, wasn't it? Though, you know, you're not meant to talk about menstruation, miscarriage, and now menopause. And, you know, we don't really talk about them as a society. And we're starting to do that. We're starting to have those conversations. And I think GPs are now starting to have those conversations amongst themselves. It's getting easier, but yeah, at 39 and having two small young children and can't work out why I'm forgetting things all the time. Why do I feel this crushing anxiety sometimes and not others? And why is my period so weird? Or why am I having UTIs and things like that? So it is really strange.
And it does feel like it surprises all of us, however old we are. And I said that before on this podcast, some of that is the image of what a menopausal woman looks like. And we don't match that image anymore. You know, you have young children. And I can only imagine how hard that is, because psychologically, you can't imagine that you're near menopause or you're in menopause, because you've got toddlers.
I've got friends who are just having their first children as well, or second children. And a lot of the time when I was going to the GP and saying, my periods are missing, I don't know what's going on, and I've taken pregnancy tests, I felt pregnant sometimes. I was having these massive hormonal symptoms. And that's what in the back of my head, I'm thinking, oh, it must be this. When I was having these missed periods and having these floods that come afterwards, it was a little bit like, this is what miscarriage was like. And this experience of hormones and the mental health aspects that go with all that sort of stuff was flooding back and coming back again. And also, this is the point my career is meant to be taking off. And this is the point I'm getting kids into primary school and things. It doesn't really help.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other point as well. For us, for women, often our career is taking off at a later point than it might be for other women, because we've been looking after small children, you know, and maybe we've taken a part-time role or more of a backseat, or not wanted to take on something as big as we might have taken on before. And then that can sort of put a judder into your career, really, can't it? Where it just sort of sets it back a little bit. And then comes the menopause, which also impacts work. So let's talk about work. So Women of the BBC North, which you're co-chair of, I do some freelance stuff for the BBC, and I didn't know there was a Women of the BBC, but it's probably because I'm only freelance. So, you know, I don't read all the emails.
There's quite a lot in there. Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, that one's not for me. So maybe I shouldn't be in Women of the BBC. But tell me about that, and then we'll talk about the Menopause Cafe.
I mean, the Women of the BBC group was started in Salford by two amazing women. And from that, we've done stuff around pregnancy at work. With raising issues around fair pay, equality and stuff. And I joined that group back in 2019. I'm thinking my memory is shot, so I'm going to say 2019 with confidence. Since then, my thing has been about like trying to raise awareness with menopause. And it's really difficult because amongst quite a young group of women, and it's not on their mind, and it's on mine, and maybe, you know, quite a bit. And my thing was just to sort of say, well, we should be doing something around this. And why is there, you know, Channel 4 and ITV and all the big companies are updating their own policy? And it didn't feel like we were doing anything, considering we're nearly 20,000 people and 60% of us women. And I worked in children's and education, which is an amazing department, but we've got 60-70% of the staff are women, with a growing workforce as well. You know, there's a lot more women in their 40s, 50s, and 60s than there were when I started in the industry. So I started this menopause group with a couple of friends who I knew from work, who had done some training with me around the menopause. And we looked at the menopause cafes, which was set up by Rachel Weiss, not the actress, a lovely lady from Perth, though. And I think at the BBC, I was very keen for us to do something, because there is lots of amazing TV and radio productions being made about the menopause, but it felt like once you got in the building and you were there as a staff or a freelancer, that support kind of dwindled away to a nice page on our intranet. But actual understanding from managers is very little about this big significant change in a lot of people's lives and a lot of their staff's lives, and having impact not only on the women there, but also the partners of women there as well. And so far it seems to be really good, and we've got a core group as well who are trying to do things like, let's set some training up for managers. That's one of the things that keeps getting asked about. Let's have a look at the policy and see what well-being we can offer around it, and making sure that people have got somewhere to go to when they want to ask a question.
So, but it's a really interesting point. So the Menopause Cafe, I've had Rachel Weiss on the podcast in the first series, and she's a wonderful sort of tour de force. It was a great idea. And obviously for you with your Menopause Cafe within the BBC, it's a lovely space that you can all talk openly. I'm curious to know, and this is going to be, you know, anecdotal slash your own evidence, I'm curious to know how much those women who come to the BBC Menopause Cafe, who can talk openly there, then feel that they can go back and talk, you know, in their place of work with their colleagues, with their managers, or is this a sort of offloading in your group, but still not able to take that back into work?
So there is a bit of the, you know, offloading, and it's a safe space, and it is really on the rules of like, we don't name specific people, you know, we try and keep it, if you're talking about your manager, don't, you know, don't name them. But it's also a big space for advice of like how to deal with stuff. So the last session, there was the sort of topics of conversation were about having that conversation with your manager and how to do it. And there was women talking about, you know, I've had a really successful conversation. I, you know, talked about the sort of support I needed, the change in hours that I might need, or the, you know, assistance with a bit of technology in order to help me memorize things or help me prioritize better. And women were all sort of coming together and saying, oh yeah, I did this. And then there was, you know, a few horror stories of, I spoke to my manager about it and they freaked out and they have not spoken to me ever since. So how do I have that next conversation with them? It's good to hear all the stories, but it's quite alarming for me that that there are managers out there who are getting a little bit freaked out by things. So that's our next step. It's like, well, how, what do we do to make that better for them? But then again, there was people who were sort of saying, look, I had this conversation with my team, you know, because we've got women who are in their 40s and 50s, they're managers themselves. They're not always referring up to somebody. They were talking about how they broached it with their team, saying like, well, you know, this is the reason for this happening. Or, you know, when I was saying I was unwell and suffering from migraines, it was all related to my hormones. It's not something that's going to happen all the time, but this is what I'm going through at the moment. And having that open conversation with them. I mean, my team are quite bored of me harping on about it all the time, but I do go like, I'm sorry, I forgot that. Send it to me in an email. I know we're having a conversation about this right now, but I'm going to follow it up with this. I'm going to do this for you. You need to remind me as well. And so just trying to get it part of the sort of day-to-day conversation where they get fed up with me talking about it.
Okay, here we go. This is my final HRT diary of this season. How has it been 8 weeks in? Well, point number one, the doctor said it can take up to 12 weeks to have any significant effect. So we won't even look at how it's going until it's been 12 weeks. So I'm not quite there yet. But you know what? I'm not sure there's been any significant change. I will list a few. Breast tenderness, which I had quite badly for about a week ago, but that does seem to have eased up a little bit. I was terrified I was going to get a period because some people say they get periods on HRT, but I didn't. Phew. Little bit spotty. It's like revisiting my teenage years. Most of these are kind of around my chin and jawline. And then people are saying, oh, you know, you get spotty wearing a mask, which obviously we're all doing because we're in a pandemic. So hard to kind of pick that one apart. But yeah, definitely a little bit spotty. On the plus sides, I think my aching is a little bit better because I was finding I was having to kind of unfold myself having got out of a car after an hour's journey. But that does seem to have been a little bit better. So it's been interesting in the sense that nothing monumental has changed since I've been on Estragel. However, if it's busy making my bones strong and improving my heart health and working on my brain, I think my brain fog might be a little bit better. I think I'm only losing every 10th word now instead of, you know, every 5th word. So there you go. That's my HRT roundup. You know, I feel it's not dramatic enough. Although as I sit here, rain is pounding outside. It's quite a dramatic, dark morning. So, you know, the drama is from without, but not from within. However, in series 3, when the HRT will be well and truly bedded in, I will report back. Hopefully I'll be, I don't know, trapezing by then. So yeah, that's my HRT update. Let's go back to Erin, shall we?
When it comes to the BBC's public facing side, the, you know, the on camera, on mic side of things, I'm curious to know how you think having a more open menopause conversation generally might impact in a positive way the sort of image of women, older women being more prevalent. And I know that the BBC will have some very robust policies about not discriminating against women of a certain age, you know, that they can carry on reading the news or presenting programmes. But I think we all know, as women in any walk of life, not just the BBC, that there is some unconscious bias, that there is so much social pressure for women to look a certain way up to a certain age, or when they get to a certain age to carry on trying to look a certain way, whereas a guy is allowed to go, you know, bald and fat and grey, and it doesn't seem to make any difference. It's almost like we have to disappear at about 55 and then come back at 70. You know, it's okay to be, it's okay to be grandma, but it's not okay to be in the interim. You know, those roles need to be equal for men and women.
They do. And, you know, you've got like amazing women in their 50s, you know, Claudia Winkleman and Tess Daly on like hosting a Saturday night TV programme. And if you said that 10 years ago, they'd be like, no chance. But yes, there is that sort of idea that we have to look a certain way. And like you're saying, when a man does it, sometimes it's considered, oh, well, you know, as they become more esteemed or more craggier they are, the more intelligent they look in certain ways and stuff. And I think, yes, there is that societal pressure, and there is that as an organisation or any organisation should be doing is looking at that ageism. You know, the Sex and the City women, there's a trailer out at the moment and they're going, oh my God, these women look so old. And it's like, no, they look like women in their 50s. The idea of what, you know, society says is acceptable in Western society, it's, yeah, it's pretty awful. And I think, you know, going through early menopause, a lot of the stuff that happens to you when you go through menopause in your late 40s and 50s and things that you expect, you know, your skin starts to sag, you know, you start getting itchy, dry, more wrinkles, you know, sort of hitting that at the age of 40 and looking down at my hands, looking at my grandma's hands, and I'm thinking, what's going on? Why is this happening? And it's a bit of a pressure, especially when you're working with lots of young people in the industry and it's all over TV. Yeah, there is that weird pressure, and I don't know why we have to put up with it and why we should hide away between our 50s and our 70s when you can come out looking like Helen Mirren and things. And there's no in between for any of us. We can't just do what we want.
It's interesting that you mentioned Strictly and Claudia Winkleman and Tess Daly, because you're absolutely right. It's unthinkable. And, you know, when dear old Bruce Forsyth was in charge of that show, it was very much him and a female co-host, and it was brave and bold that it went completely to two women and two women of a certain age. But, you know, just looking at what they have on their feet, they do a live TV show in the most uncomfortable clothes imaginable with so much makeup on. And I'm sure every time the camera's off them, they're being, you know, touched up again. You know, yeah. And of course, that will be happening for the men, for the shine and stuff as well. But but it is almost an intolerable, I would imagine, it's situation to have to work in. But I'm sure if they went and said, you know what, I'd really like to do this in some flat shoes and some, you know, and not a dress that I have to be rigged into with my mic pack and everything, you know, actually I'd like to do it in something comfortable, I would imagine that would be a very difficult conversation to have.
It would be, yeah. You know, it's almost like they're actors on a stage, and that's where you become as presenters. You present this version of yourself that you want every day, but it's like the glamour of the TV. You know, the women on the stage need to look a certain way. And you get it with CEOs of business and women who are putting themselves out there and presenting, you know, the hair has to look a certain way, and the way they dress, and any suggestion that they aren't absolutely manicured, but also can, you know, be CEO of a massive business, doesn't feel right for people to be able to see that. You know, if you actually turned up and shirt isn't tucked in, I haven't had time to do my hair today, I've just scraped it back.
Are you describing Boris Johnson, by the way, the leader of the country?
Well, there you go.
Yeah. I mean, he seems to be allowed to have absolutely
others,
no grooming at all.
But exactly. Like, you know, running the country, you just wouldn't get away with that as a woman.
So here you are, Erin, at 43. You've just got your HRT prescription. Mike, can I ask you what you've got? I mean, you don't have to give me that, but is it patches? You've got oral. What are you going for?
Estrogen and progesterone. So it's 2 weeks estrogen, 2 weeks progesterone, estrogen mix as well. Osteoporosis is the biggest worry for me. You know, you've got quite a long time until I would be naturally in menopause, you know, in my 50s. And it's quite a long time to be without estrogen, and having previously had, you know, hip dysplasia and stuff as a child and things like that, I you know, do worry about my bone health. And, you know, I love to cycle. That's one of the things I absolutely have taken on a lot more of since I've become perimenopausal. It, you know, it helps with my anxiety levels, it helps with hot flushes even, because it gives me an excuse to sweat rather than just lying in bed and things like that.
I also really like the point that you may not have intended to make there, but the idea that you can force a hot flush out through exercise and then you won't have so many. I like the idea that there may be a finite number of them. If I can get them out while I'm cycling, then I don't have to have them in bed.
Not medically correct.
Oh, I know, but I love it. I might try it myself.
I think I spent last April, and we'd been away, and I was just lying on this hotel feeling awful, and couldn't control these hot flushes that just kept on coming and coming and coming. And then I thought the next week of like getting on my bike and I was experiencing them, and I was like, no, do you know what? I'm going to tackle that hill. I'm going to sweat. I feel awful. I'm going to feel it because I've got up the top of this hill near me. And I did. And it's just put me in a different frame of mind, I think, really. But yeah, and doing that strength training and doing that cycling is, you know, building the muscles around my bones that are really aching and sore, and giving myself fatigue, but through exercise, rather than it just being through worry and sleeplessness. You know, I feel better when I've been out for a 40-kilometer ride than I do lying in bed worrying about like not being able to sleep that night. It makes me feel better anyway.
Well, I think, you know, we've had Zumba, we've had spin classes. I think, you know, the next thing is going to be the hot flush workout, where women of a certain age get together to bring that hot flush on.
Yeah.
Well, listen, thank you very much, Erin McTague. It's been a real pleasure to have you on My Last Eggs. I hope to check back in with you in a few months and see how your HRT is going.
Thanks, Rachel.
That was Erin McTague, co-chair of Women at the BBC North, who's also set up a menopause cafe at the BBC. And if you want to find out more about how to set up your own menopause cafe, do take a listen to our Rachel Weiss episode from season one. That's the last episode of this season, but we'll be back again in the new year. And if you've just discovered us, do take a listen to the 20 plus episodes we released this year, because it has been a great year for conversations about the menopause. And by listening to this podcast, you have joined that conversation. Let's talk more about it in 2022. But until then, have a jolly holly Christmas. Is it too early to say the C word? I think not. Thank you for listening.